Chapter 4. UNSC Colony World Harvest, Epsilon Indy System, December 21, 2524. During its slip from Earth, the computer in the cryo bay of the UNSC Fast Attack Corvette 2 for Flinching led Avery through a long, cyclical slumber. Per his request, the circuits let Avery enjoy stretches of anabolic rest, bringing him through dream-filled REM as quickly and as infrequently as possible. All of this was accomplished by careful adjustments to the near-freezing atmosphere of Avery's cryopod and the judicious application of intravenous pharmaceuticals, drugs that both controlled the frequency and duration of cryo-subject sleep cycles and influenced the content of their dreams. But no matter what brand of meds Avery got before being iced, he always dreamed about the exact same thing. The worst of his missions against the insurrectionists, a series of scorched snapshots culminating in whatever operation he'd just completed. Even though the bloody specifics of these missions were things Avery would have preferred to experience only once, the true horror of his dreams was their suggestion that he had done much more harm than good. His aunt's voice echoed inside his head, "Make me proud. Do what's right." The cryocomputer observed a surge of activity in Avery's brain, an effort to yank himself out of REM, and upped his dosage. 2 for Flinching had just emerged from slipspace and was vectoring toward its destination. It was time for the computer to initiate Avery's thaw, and it was standard operating procedure to keep subjects dreaming throughout the sequence. The meds took hold, and Avery sunk deep, and his mind's eye picture show continued to roll. A hauler jackknifed in a roadside ditch, smoke belching from its burning engine. An initial round of cheers from the other Marines in a checkpoint tower, thinking Avery had just nailed an INI bomber. Then the realization that their Argus units had malfunctioned, that the hauler's dead civilian driver had done nothing but pick up the wrong load. Avery had only been a few months out of boot camp, and already the war had soured. If you listen to the carefully packaged UNSC propaganda, INIs were all the same sort of bad apple. After 2 centuries of common cause, isolated groups of ungrateful colonists began to agitate for greater autonomy, for the freedom to act in their individual world's best interest, not those of the empire at large. In the beginning, there were sizable numbers of people who felt sympathy for the INI cause. The rebels were understandably sick of being told how to run their lives, what jobs to take, how many children to make, by CA bureaucrats, the often heavy-handed proxies of an Earth-based government with an increasingly poor understanding of the colony's unique challenges. But that sympathy quickly evaporated when, after years of frustrating negotiations that went nowhere, the more radical INI factions abandoned politics for violence. At first, they hit military targets and known CA sympathizers, but as the UNSC began its counterinsurgency operations, more and more innocent people were caught in the crossfire. As a raw recruit, Avery didn't understand why the insurrection hadn't flared in outer systems, such as Cygnus, where colonists were united by shared creed and ethnicity, one of the main reasons for the collapse of Earth's old nation-state system and the rise of the UN as a unifying force. Instead, the fighting had broken out right where the UNSC was best equipped to stop it, Epsilon Eridanus, the most populous and carefully administered system outside of Sol. With all the resources at its disposal in that system, Avery wondered why the UNSC hadn't been able to pacify the INIs before things got out of hand. Fleet comm on reach, circumstances, universities and courts of justice, the industrial zones of tribute. Couldn't these powerful institutions and engines of economic prosperity have come up with a plan palatable for both sides? As the war dragged on, Avery began to realize all these resources were exactly the problem. In Epsilon Eridanus, the UNSC just had too much to lose. Avery flinched in reaction to his rising body temperature, but also to the quickening images in his head. Pockmarked houses whipping past gun slits, an unexpected boom, bodies strewn around the burning shell of the convoy's lead armored transport, muzzle flashes from rooftops, a run for cover through the carnage, ricochets and radio chatter, phosphorus plumes from ordnance dropped by drones, women and children running from burning houses, leaving footprints in blood thick as caramel. Eyes darting behind his lids, Avery remembered his aunt's instructions. Become the man I know you can be. He struggled to move his doped-up limbs, but the computer increased his dose and kept him down. The nightmarish final act would not be stopped. A crowded roadside restaurant, a desperate woman surrounded by determined men, the kicking feet of a choking child, a father's lunge, and the moment Avery let slip, reducing all to shock and heat that sent his hornet spinning.